Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Stuart Smith from Rydale Vineyards. How are you, Stuart?
Fine, thank you, Chris.
Excellent. You guys are got a vineyard up north in Yorkshire, which is Fairway North.
We've got one of seven vineyards in Yorkshire. There are now seven different commercial vineyards. We're just one of them.
That's quite a bit, because when we first went up to Yorkshire, we interviewed George from Leventhorpe Vineyards, and he seemed to think there was him and one other one that was just about to be planted, and that was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Well, the one about to be planted would be us.
Yeah.
And yes, George has been there for 25 years now.
So he's
been the real pioneer.
Yeah, okay. And you guys have a vine importing business, which I want to talk about mainly. But let's just find out a bit about your experience up in Yorkshire. And when did you say you planted?
We planted in 2006, and we started with 7,000 vines then,
mm-hmm.
which we had machine planted for us.
Oh, okay.
Which at 1,000 vines an hour went fairly quickly.
How does that happen? Is it just something that cuts a hole and then sticks it in?
It's a massive tractor with a machine behind. A couple of guys sit on there. And it opens up a furrow. They feed vines in all day long, one at a time, and the furrow's closed up behind the vines.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh, that's a fancy bit of kit.
So that's how most of the big vineyards are planted now.
Is it?
Mm.
And there's not damage about root balls and all that sort of stuff?
I think occasionally there might be the odd air pocket, that kind of thing, depending on how well they work. But other than that, the vines aren't damaged, and it's a really efficient way of doing it.
Mm, gosh, that's quite impressive. And how long does it take you to plant your... how many hectares did you say?
We've got about 3.5 hectares, something like that, 10,000 vines.
And how long did that take to plant doing that?
The initial 7,000, 7 hours, and then they came back and did another 3,000 or so for us.
Oh, that's not bad going. Is that a team in the UK, or do they come over from France?
No, there are teams coming over from Germany and Luxembourg,
mm-hmm.
And they're here for about a month or just over.
And what grapes are you growing up there, Stuart?
We're growing everything from the very earliest, which would be Solaris for white and Rondo for red and rosé.
When you say earliest, you mean earliest
ripening? Earliest ripening,
yeah.
So September ripening with us.
Solaris?
Yeah.
I haven't come across that before.
Okay, I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Yeah.
Through to Pinot Noir and Chardonnay at the late end for quality sparkling wine.
And how's the Pinot and Chardonnay ripening?
They ripened, even though last year was a dreadful year, we got reasonable sugars. We got gravities of 60-odd, whereas, of course, ideally, you're aiming for 70-odd or 80.
A specific gravity alcohol.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
But Solaris you were asking about, if I go back to that.
Yep.
That's a brilliant early variety, capable, I think, of quite high quality, and bred from Riesling and Pinot Gris.
Oh, okay. So they're both vitis vinifera.
Plenty of quality in the breeding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a bit of hybrid in there as well.
Is there?
Yeah. So it's fairly disease resistant, which is quite handy too.
Yeah. I never heard of that. How do you spell it?
Solaris.
And where did it come from originally?
Oh, it's bred, I think, at Freiburg in Germany. Most of the new varieties come from the German Institute.
How long has it been imported into the UK?
Around about 6 years, I think. We supplied a couple of people with it and then decided we should go for it ourselves.
I tried your rosé earlier, and that was quite nice, actually. I was quite impressed with it.
It's okay. It won a bronze medal in the English and Welsh Wine of the Year the first time we made it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's doing okay.
Yeah, no, that's not too bad. And are you producing a red wine as well? I tried a Rondo, was that right?
No, you tried a Rondo from another Yorkshire vineyard, which I think was quite a good wine.
Yeah,
really.
No, that was quite decent, actually. I'm always a bit worried about English reds in general, and the further north you go, I get even more worried about just ripening up the tannins.
Yeah, it's the sugars in the first place. It's getting the acids low enough, and then it's a decent quality winemaker, and I can say that because I didn't make that wine.
Do you make your own wines?
We do, yeah. We have a consultant winemaker as well. We get Simon Day to come and make wine with us at the initial harvest. And then I do all the other work through the winter.
Okay, so all the rack.
Yeah, and the subsequent pickings after the first one.
Oh, okay, so are you going through the vineyard multiple times, aren't you?
Well, you have to with a range of varieties like we've got, but it's worth having a range of varieties so that you miss whatever problems come along, whether it's a late frost in May or whatever. If you have enough varieties, there will always be some that cope with and survive the problems that come along.
Yeah, so it's very much the insurance policy
Absolutely.
Type approach. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Some people have a range of grape varieties when they first start, and then they sort of hone down on it. Is it? Do you think your weather is just too variable to manage, to zoom in on a couple?
No, I don't think the climate in North Yorkshire is any more fickle than anywhere else. We already know our major varieties, which are Rondo and Solaris, because even in a dreadful cold year, they're early enough to ripen pretty well.
Yep.
And I think our wine styles are now becoming established. We've got the Yorkshire Sunset Rosé made largely from Rondo.
Yep.
We've got one called Wolds View because we're very near the Yorkshire Wolds. And that's Solaris based with some Phoenix and Sauval Blanc. Mm-hmm. And then we've got one called Yorkshire Lass. And the name sells that to local people anyway. And that's currently Ortega and Sauval Blanc.
Okay.
And Ortega is going really well for us. We're very pleased with it.
You've talked about Solaris and Ortega, Sauval Blanc. And I've seen Sauval Blanc up there with George at Leventhorpe's. And he produced an okay Sauval Blanc. And I've seen Ortega from being produced in down southeast end of England as well. What grape varieties do you think work further north as it gets cooler, and how do they differ from further south? Because you've got quite a bit of experience from importing vines and selling them to various people.
Yeah, we see what the trends are really in the market for buying vines. Clearly in the last 5 or 6 years, there's been a tremendous amount of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay and Meunier planted for sparkling. That really hasn't happened in the Midlands and North to the same extent at all. It's quite exceptional for somebody to plant a vineyard based around that, other than in the South, Southeast.
Is it because they don't ripen enough, or people aren't trying to produce sparkling wines?
I think because it's such an expensive business to get into, I think people feel safer making that kind of investment in, if you like, the far south of England so far. I've no doubt that will spread as time goes by too. The other trends that you observe really are that there are just minor shifts really in what people might want to plant further north. So for instance, whereas Bacchus is widely planted for that aromatic style of white wine in the south, the further north you get, the more plantings there are of Ortega.
Yep.
So it's just a substitute of a fairly similar variety with a relatively similar wine produced from it.
I always find Bacchus is, I think of it more like a Sauvignon Blanc because it's got quite piercing acidity, or it can have piercing acidity. Whereas Ortega, I've seen oaked versions of it. Ortega seems a more richer, rounder wine.
Yes, but the further north you grow it, perhaps it will have that little acidic edge to it.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you're finding, as you're getting further north, you're getting that crispness coming through.
I think so.
Oh, okay. And who do you supply your vines to? Is it everybody, all and sundry, or is there... How does the vine market work? So I've never really thought about it too much.
That's evolving like everything else. A lot of the bigger plantings, the customers go direct to continental nurseries. And many times that works fine, but it carries a risk with it.
What's that?
Well, it's not unknown that some of the big nurseries offload, if not substandard plants, some plants that have been grown in the nursery, not sold, replanted, and really aren't awfully good quality plants when they come, and take a year or two longer then to flourish. The orders we get tend to be for the medium-sized orders and smaller orders, very often for sparkling wine production.
And how many hectares would that be? You know, what's a medium-sized order? Is it
a
hectare?
Oh, a medium-sized order might well be 5, 10 or 20,000 vines.
And how many hectares would that cover?
Well, at 1,000 vines an acre, that's 2,500 vines a hectare, roughly.
Yeah, okay.
Though some people do plant more closely with less vigorous rootstocks.
Sure, sure.
There's a lot of information about the range of rootstocks and the type of clones people want to use that comes into play with Pinot and Chardonnay.
Yeah, I was going to get into that, because rootstocks... I always think of rootstock needs to be tailored to the soil, and the scion needs to be tailored to what you want to produce.
To the wine, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Do the people who are buying vines, do they know exactly what rootstock they want, or are they looking for guidance on the rootstock?
Quite a lot know exactly what they want. There's another group who will have had a lot of work done on the soil analysis and so on, and be coming through with that information then to discuss what rootstocks to use. And then as you get towards the smaller orders, people are a bit more approximate, frankly, about how much they know and what they really want. Sometimes it comes down to availability, because, for instance, the rootstock SO4 is the most versatile and the most widely used, and therefore the easiest to obtain all sorts of varieties on.
Yep.
And that's fine on most reasonably drained soils. It doesn't like really heavy, cold clay, and it doesn't like absolute rank chalk.
Yeah,
but most things in between that will do pretty well on.
Yeah. What's the disease you get if you're on chalk couleur? Is that right? Was there a drink? I can't remember. Coke and Kahlua. No, there's an iron deficiency, isn't it?
Yeah, you can easily get deficiencies on chalk if you haven't got the right rootstock and you're not feeding the vines, that's right.
Okay.
There are one or two specialist chalk rootstocks which are being demanded more and more now. There's one called Faircal, slightly less vigorous than SO4. And actually, it copes with a decent range of soils as well, but it tends to be used for chalk.
Because it's more suitable.
Yeah, and it has the advantage of enhancing ripening slightly.
So what can a rootstock do to a vineyard? You say it can deal with nutrient deficiencies. How does it deal with nutrient deficiencies? Does it?
No, it just flourishes on a particular sort of soil more than a different rootstock would and enables the vine to be more successful and function more successfully.
Oh, okay. So it's better at building the root mass.
Yeah, depending partly whether it's a tap rooting one or a shallow rooting one or a combination of the two.
Oh, I haven't really thought about this.
Yes. Okay. There are semi-plunging rootstocks,
I know some trees put down a tap root that goes straight down, and then everything branches out from that. And then you've got other ones that are quite shallow, because I've pulled weeds out of the garden, and some of them just go straight down into China or New Zealand, and some are just very easy to pull out. So I always thought that all rootstocks would be very similar.
Not at all. It's the different character of them that means some are better suited to wet soils or dry soils, etc.
Oh, okay. Well, how does it work then? Is it that
Well, if you have a shallow rooting rootstock and your soil is wet and heavy, it's going to miss most of that. And as long as it doesn't dry out, it will cope better with it.
Oh, because the water from the top drains faster.
Whereas in a sandy soil, you may well need something that's going to get further down and get some moisture from somewhere.
Oh, okay. Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? That's pretty sensible, actually.
Yep. Now, talked about Faircal for a minute, suiting chalk.
Yep.
The other one that's used a lot in France for limestone and chalk is 41B.
They've got great names, haven't they? 41B. Reminds me of an old girlfriend. Oops.
Well, tell me about that. But 41B has the downside that it latens ripening a little bit, whereas Faircal advances it.
Oh, okay.
So there are all those little tweaks.
How it delays it or advances the ripening period?
It's about the length of vegetative cycle, A, that the variety has, and B, that the rootstock itself is inclined to have.
Okay, and when you say vegetative, that's like the when it's actually growing the roots.
Yeah, from starting in the spring to finishing in the autumn.
Oh, yeah. So as it warms up, some roots will kick off a bit earlier and they'll start growing. I suppose when the root's growing, it can't really drive the scion or the head of the vine too much.
Yeah, when the rootstock naturally is vigorous and working, and when it's not.
Oh, see, I'd never really got into roots too much, but it's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot to know, and clearly I don't know it all, but I certainly know which rootstocks tend to suit what kinds of soil.
The people who do the soil analysis, who are they?
The agronomists.
Yeah, agronomists, that's a great name, isn't it?
I mean, some people just take their own soil samples, but whether they're taken as scientifically across a site as they would be by an agronomist, and whether they're then in the best position to interpret the results when they come back, you know, is questionable.
Do you get these soil reports and then recommend vines, or...?
Yeah, from some of the bigger plantings, people actually send us the whole report. On the other hand, we work with probably the best vineyard agronomist around in our own vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
He works up and down the length and breadth of the UK.
Yep.
So he will often send us the reports for people who he knows we're supplying.
And then, so what's the process? You know, let's say I've got a vineyard, I've had my agronomist come along. I love that word. I've never heard it before, but it's a great word. My agronomist has come along, he's checked out my soils, he's decided, you know, I've got a bit of clay on top with a nice bit of limestone underneath. I come to you and I say, Stuart, sell me some vines. I want to make sparkling wine.
So we talk about what varieties you actually want to use to do that, because it's perfectly possible to make a totally Chardonnay-based sparkling wine, a Blanc de Blanc.
Yep.
Or a blend, or if you really wanted to, you could just use Pinot Noir, say.
Yep.
And some people do have quite strong feelings about that.
Mm-hmm.
And looking then at the whole issue of the site, not just the soil, some people might have a site at, say, 300 or 400 feet. And therefore, what you probably want to do is to have some of the clones that will ripen marginally earlier than some of the others.
Because it's a bit colder.
Because it will be colder and you'll have a slightly shorter growing season. So all those factors are taken into account.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll come up with a recommended list of clones and rootstock combinations.
Does everybody go, right, I'm going to plant this, or because most vineyard people talk about, you know, we'll plant maybe a section of our vineyard, see how it grows, and then we'll plant the rest after a few years once we've got experience. Is that quite typical, or are some people like, I know what I want, this is what I'm going to do? Because I understand, like when Nightimer planted up there, when Eric planted up his vineyard, he did a pretty big planting in one hit.
Yeah.
So how confident do you have to be? You know, what you know, is it very much a case of grab yourself and hope that you're doing it right, or can be people be quite confident if they've got other vineyards nearby?
Well, I think what Nightimber did was building on experience of the area, of the varieties, of the wine production and of the marketing of selling, so they could afford to feel pretty comfortable about what they were doing.
Yep.
People who are new to the business quite often do plant. For instance, we had a customer in, shall we say, South Central, to avoid being too specific, who bought 20,000 vines 3 or 4 years ago and has since bought another 10,000, and I wouldn't be too surprised if they don't buy another 10,000 in a year or two's time.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual to build gradually in that way, particularly if you're heading towards being quite a large enterprise.
We've decided on the rootstock, we've decided on the scion. I like that word, scion. Mm. But I tell you what I want. It's, I don't know, let's say it's November now. What's the order process, the delivery time?
Well, the order process is that you've worked towards the combination of variety and rootstock and clone. Mm-hmm. Once that's sorted, the sooner it's reserved, the better, because since there are so many combinations, and particularly if you want one of the more obscure rootstocks, the sooner they're ordered, the better. So we'll get them in the order book, and either the customer or I will then talk to a planting team, because it's nearly always going to be machine planted for a reasonable number of vines. Mm-hmm. And we get that booked in, and the planting team leader will come over and visit the site within a few weeks. And progressively, it all gets more and more tied into the schedule, and offers are made to plant metal rods with the vines so that they've got a stake there and you're not going around sticking bamboo canes in, which will rot within a couple of years.
Yeah, sure.
You know, the full service can be offered gradually, really, through the winter and put in place before the planting.
And how much notice do the nurseries need? Do they produce a load of stock and then they hope they flog it the next year, or is it made to order, or how does it work?
It's both, but I would say 90% is produced and available for sale. Mm-hmm. But wherever we know that somebody wants something in advance, it's far better to have it grafted to order. But most people are very, very reluctant to commit themselves to placing an order more than a few months before they're planting.
When you say grafted to order, how much time do you need to graft something to order?
About 12 months, really. The grafting is taking place now.
For next
year? All over Western Europe, wherever the vine nurseries. They're actually at this moment busy with grafting machines, putting a length of rootstock and a little bit of variety into the machine, omega grafting it together,
yep,
packing them together into boxes in moist heat, and as soon as they start rooting and shooting, by certainly early June, they'll be out in a nursery site in lovely fine soil and planted out for the summer, and then lifted in the autumn, washed, graded, packed into cold store, ready for spring delivery.
When you say washed, you're removing all the soil and all
that?
Pretty
much.
Okay, and they're quite happy being out of the soil over winter?
They're in cold store at not much more than 0 degrees, yes.
So they're completely shut down?
They're dormant.
Okay, that makes sense.
So we even have a cold store ourselves, so that when the vines come over to us but aren't quite ready to go to the customer, we can keep them at the right temperature too.
And that omega graft,
there's a shaped blade,
yeah,
in the machine that
you bring down. That's the same shape as the omega, yeah. And then the two slide together, don't they?
Yeah, they're literally squashed together within the machine.
And the rootstock, do they actually have to take it from the roots, or do they have a rootstock plant and then they just take it?
Yeah, there are mother plants for the rootstocks as well as for the varieties, which are inspected every year.
Yep.
And I've seen the rootstock arrive at our growers in Luxembourg, and they're just enormous lengths of
cane.
Yeah.
And it's all new cane, isn't it? New season cane.
Yeah, and the first thing they do is go through a cutting machine that knocks all the buds off, because you don't want growth from way down the rootstock.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's chopped to length, and then it's packed, and then it's kept in moist bags, you know, until it's used.
What's the strike rate? You know, how many plants don't take?
Depends on the variety.
Oh, okay.
One of the worst varieties is one that's quite popular in the Midlands and North, called Madeleine Angevin.
Oh, yeah, I know Madeleine.
I mean, George has a Madeleine Angevin, yeah, wine from Lebanon.
Yeah, yeah, I've tried that.
And in terms of grafting, you can get anything from 33% to 80 or 90%, depending on the year.
Oh, really?
With no obvious explanation whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
But I think in general, it's probably about 90%.
And that's of the grafts as opposed to the plant that's had a year to grow and then it's been...
Oh, the success rate's quite different then. We reckon that we get less than 1% failures and we get lots of people who come back to us and say they've grown really well and, you know, we just don't need replacements at all.
Okay.
But if people come back to us and say, you know, okay, we bought 1,000 vines, any chance of 20 replacements... You know, we'll send them some, of course.
Something I've always wanted to know, and I think you're probably the best person, is how much does it cost to plant a vineyard? You know, let's say I've got, I don't know, 5 hectares, yeah. And I want to get it planted out, and I come to you and I say, I've got 5 hectares, I want mid-priced vines on a mid-priced rootstock, mm-hmm. And I want you to plant it up, including getting your gang over to and put a pole in as well, the whole thing. Not necessarily strung. I don't want posts strung at this
no,
early
okay.
stage.
Right. I mean, there are several answers to that question, depending what the exact spec is. But if you said for, what, 5 hectares?
Yep.
Okay. For the vine and a metal post put in with it and a rabbit guard round it, unless you're fencing the whole place,
yep.
You would do that for under £2 a vine. But, of course, that then becomes, what, £5,000 per hectare, I think that works out at.
Yep.
So you're looking at 25 grand for 5 hectares. But that's quite a planting then, quite a vineyard.
Yeah, quite a substantial amount of stuff in the ground there. All right then, Stuart. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been really interesting.
Pleasure. I've enjoyed it. Thank
you. Cheers very much, bud.